Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs, business people, authors, speakers, anybody I can find who are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice with us each week. And oftentimes they drill down and they share their story with us, which is really fascinating. So today I welcome to the show Dan R. Morris. Dan has been working online since 2008 when he got involved with the marketing of an antioxidant nutritional supplement. And through radio and TV infomercials, curious customers would research the product and then buy it online. So he worked on marrying the messaging with the audience's goals to increase his sales and customer retention. And from there, he just kind of took off and became his own entrepreneur, which is kind of how it works, and that's the story I want to get from him today. He has worked with bloggers, niche website owners, restaurants, tutors, national brands, and professional speakers, among others. And he primarily works now with clients in mastermind groups, private consulting, group classes, workshops, and through customized consulting agreements. There's a lot to ask this man. Good morning, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi. We have a mutual friend, don't we?
We have several, I imagine. It's a small world.
I know you were introduced to me by Jason Alkins.
Oh, yes, Mr. Transparent Social Media himself.
That's right. That's right. He's a fabulous guy. Well, listen, I have a ton of questions for you. Can you share a bit about yourself with our audience?
Yeah, sure. I always find that an interesting question because, you know, like in our business lives, I think that we do that less than we do everything else. You know,
we'll tell
stories that illustrate a point and we'll use anecdotes, but for me personally, I always shy away from self-publication or whatever you would call that. Like I don't even have my college degree, you know, on the wall. It's like in the attic. Anything that has to do with me, about me, or making me look, you know, bigger than I am, I put away.
We're related. We must be. My degree is hidden in a box in a closet somewhere.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about, and it's difficult because, I'm guessing here, but as entrepreneurs, our job is to help other people and never make it about ourselves.
So I know, it's kind of, for me, it's the opposite of doctors. When you go into a doctor's office and their I Love Me wall is full of every degree they've ever had.
Right.
And I always think, why is that so important? Like, what about pictures of the people that, you know, whose lives you changed and,
right,
you know, those
good
kinds
point
of things. But,
good point.
But, yeah,
I guess they call
they
it
have
social
great
proof.
I Love Me walls.
They do. They really do. Well, listen, how did you go, since I won't put you on the spot about, you know, telling me about your family and your children, which is not why we're here. Anyway, but listen, I get your reticence. I'm the same way. I don't even have a signature speech. People will say, well, you know, what about you, Denise? What do you want to know? I don't have it. I know what I do, and I do it well, and that's what I want to talk about. So I totally get you on that one. Listen, but I do have a question for you. You went from, I'm guessing, MLM to being an entrepreneur, which in some ways is the same thing. In other ways, it's very, very different. Can you kind of walk us through that trajectory, if you would?
Yeah, I was not actually I was part of an MLM on the side once, but I've never actually really participated in network marketing that way.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
When we did the antioxidant nutritional supplement, that's a product that we own the worldwide marketing rights to, and decided that we were going to market it in TV and radio infomercials.
That makes sense then. Okay.
Yeah. Direct response marketing was what that was. And that was, direct response is pretty much, I think, where marketing is heading, period, in the end. More and more companies are realizing that direct response, which is the process of advertising something and then giving the consumer a direct action to take that resolves itself in giving us, the marketer, revenue and the customer information or product. So we're most familiar with direct response in the infomercial industry. We know that when we watch them, they're going to say, call now, the 16th caller wins, and if you call right away, you also get, an extra copy, and, that whole concept of direct response is pretty powerful. And what makes it a fantastic marketing tool is that it is 100% trackable. Like, there's very little you don't know about a direct response campaign, which is the part that I loved. When Pepsi decides to buy a billboard on the highway, they have absolutely no idea if that did anything, for their company. And in fact, 3 or 4 years ago, Roger Enrico, the CEO of Pepsi, said that they were no longer going to do Super Bowl commercials because that was a ton of money for absolutely no lift in sales, after any particular Super Bowl. So
how long
it was
did
just
it
a
take
big...
them to figure that out? I mean, those commercials are insanely expensive, and I never have been able to figure out how they could justify paying that much money for those, any company, unless they're
really, really tax. Yeah, I haven't
really,
got either,
really
other than somebody like GoDaddy. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that sell domains, but
right,
one
but can
company...
Can they track the efficacy of that those commercials? I mean, isn't that something fairly new that they even bothered to do, or were they just doing it because it's kind of the gold standard? You have to, or it was the gold standard, you have to have a commercial on the Super Bowl. But as far as I could tell, and I could be dead wrong, I don't think they were really tracking how well these things were doing for them. They were just doing them and hoping for the best.
Well, this year with our Blogging Concentrated membership, we actually had a Skype chat during the Super Bowl for the sole purpose of talking about all the marketing aspects of it. Mm. And we tracked every website that actually was mentioned and then whether or not they use a trackable URL and, all the things that companies would do on the Super Bowl to figure out how can we as bloggers use what they're doing to our advantage. Right. And you're right, most of them didn't do anything. But quite a few savvier companies actually did have trackable URLs. They had a specific URL to the Super Bowl ad that they didn't use anywhere else, so they could see the impact. I think the biggest one was, I can't remember the name of it, that's how powerful it was, but they were giving away $1 million, right after the Super Bowl, and you had to tweet or you had to do something. Well, anyway, they ended up growing their Twitter base by 400,000 that day.
Well, that makes sense because there's a call to action and there's the little thing on the end of the stick there, the carrot on the stick on come on, do this.
And the most successful direct response campaign during the Super Bowl was when CompuServe and AOL were fighting. And AOL recently had gotten really big, but the news was all flutter with the fact that people were complaining that they kept getting busy signals when they tried to log into AOL. Mm. So CompuServe took advantage of that, and all they had was a black screen with the busy signal. And then it said, tired of getting a busy signal at AOL, go to CompuServe today and get, eight free hours or something. So that ended up being really, really good for them, except they couldn't figure out how to retain customers, so they ended up going bankrupt.
Uh-huh.
But my work in direct response was, we would buy time on TV, we would have specific spots, specific ads, we could, very specific phone numbers, we could track to the second, during the TV commercial or radio commercial when people would call, what were the triggers that got people to call, and then what call scripts on the calling side would actually convert. And then even on the web, people would, you know, for a while we did not put a URL in the commercial. And that was not so good, but it wasn't horrible in the beginning. Eventually we put in a URL that went to a specific for TV page where the page mirrored the commercial itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that worked really, really well. But even while we didn't have a trackable URL and people would just Google the name and they'd come to the website, you know, without doing any other advertising whatsoever, it was clear that the only people that were researching it were TV people. And you could kind of see this, you could see the spike in analytics, you know, after our big money spends on weekends or something.
Right, that makes sense.
So learning how to do all of that meant that I started to understand that if I'm going to spend $1 on marketing, I better know exactly what the return from that dollar is. And if I don't know what the return is, like on a billboard or a Yellow Page ad, then I need to figure out today, if I'm going to do that again, how do I turn that into something trackable? So on billboards, you can have trackable phone numbers and you can have trackable URLs. You know, you can have things that track an event. But what you can't track on a billboard is somebody thinks about it and goes, oh, yeah, that's a GoDaddy billboard. I need to look at them later. And instead of going to the URL on the billboard, they just Google it later. So there's just some things you can't track. But I learned really early on that even from the web, that there really isn't much you should be involved with or do that isn't trackable. Otherwise you don't end up with actionable information. You can't make changes, and you don't know where your real problems are. You just sort of stuck.
Well, and that makes perfect sense. And today, of course, we're talking about blogging in specific. So, I mean, there are a lot of marketers out there. There are a lot of, you know, people who maybe are not marketers yet, but they may have a great blog. And they're just, I see this all the time. I've been guilty of it. You just put up stuff and hope somebody sees it. And that's not a very good plan, is it?
Well, I actually have the term hope is not a marketing plan.
Exactly.
Trademark. That's our thing. We sell shirts that say hope is not a marketing plan.
Right.
But even on a blog, you know, most of the problems with blogs isn't that they're not tracking, although 99% are not tracking. But the problem is they're not even driving traffic. I mean, you get to the blog post and you read the blog post, and then it ends. And maybe they come up with something snazzy like a related post plugin, but then the related post plugin shows 4 thumbnails of random posts on the site. And if you can't marry the mindset of the person to the random, to the related posts, you're still not going to get any more clicks. So most bloggers aren't really being purposeful about the point of a blog post. Because the point is never that somebody reads the blog post. The reading of the blog post is kind of like the vehicle to the point. So the point is either this is going to create a discussion that's going to really start something in my community, or this is going to drive people to opt in for my ebook or on my mailing list, or this is going to drive people to the pages that I know are the highest paying pages on my site, the pages that make us money.
So how do you do that? Can you give us an example?
Well, you start with driving people to your email. So you can't blog and not build a list. Or, I mean, there's no way that bloggers can retire. Like, it's just, you know, you're just going to do it forever. So if you don't plan for that now, then you can't plan for it later. And one of the ways to plan for that is to build a list, because the list means that when Google goes away or when Facebook goes away or when Pinterest goes away, that we still have an opportunity to reach the people who've already raised their hand and said, I like what you produce. And without that ability to reach them, you know, we don't really have a business. We have, you know, we're just kind of relying on, you know, the goodwill of every other site on the planet to bring people to our site.
Right, so we have no control over.
No, none. You know, you can have forums on Facebook, but, you know, the days of Facebook are coming to an end, according to Facebook. as they continue to buy smaller and smaller, more popular sites so that they can own the sites where people will be later because, you know, the kids of today are not going to be on their parents' site forever.
No, they're heading over for a lot of other places, and that's, you know, that's big in the news. So you need to be kind of forward-looking with this. I see that.
But and from Facebook's point of view, they're not heading to other places. They're heading to other departments in Facebook's world. You know, they're heading to WhatsApp, which is Facebook. They're heading to Instagram, which is Facebook. So for them, they're just moving people from one department to another. Now, for us, you know, when we write a blog post and, you know, we're going to write a controversial post, then our job is to end the post so that it creates conversation. And if we don't have that in mind from the beginning, then that's very hard for us to create that need for someone to comment or retort. So we kind of have to have that goal in mind. And that goes the same for, you know, status updates. If you write a status update, you got to know, is this status update designed to get someone to comment, to get someone to share, or get somebody to click a link? One of those three. Mm-hmm. And each of those three is a different strategy in terms of how you formulate the update. So the blog post, if we're going for conversation, then we've got to really think that through. What is it about this post that is going to resonate? Is either going to make me laugh? Is going to make me angry? You know, or is somebody's going to agree with or disagree with? And how do I make that point, you know, in the last, you know, 45 words of the blog post to get them to comment? And is my blog set up so that commenting can happen naturally? Or do they have to scroll past an ad, a related post plugin, another link, and then they get to the part where they can comment? I mean, does the logistics of it make sense if this particular post is about conversation?
Mm-hmm.
And then if we're trying to drive people to opt into our list, then part of the plan of the blog post should be, I'm going to write this post about X in hopes of getting people to opt in to Y. So I need to make sure that during my writing of X that I start to pre-sell Y, that I at least highlight something in Y that is going to get them interested enough to put their name and email in, or name, phone number, and email, whatever kind of business you have.
Right.
And just, you know, writing a recipe post and then saying, hey, you know, opt in to get my, you know, 13 best recipes, that's okay. But how about writing a recipe post where you reference one of the recipes in the ebook and then have the opt-in at the end, so that you pique the interest at least, you know, because somebody giving up their privacy, it does take a little bit more than just a whim to put your name and email in something. And
these
there's
days
something
it does
in,
because we're so buried.
Yeah, there's something
I mean,
inside
you.
You
really
that,
want to be on that list.
You know, and if you come from Pinterest, that's where the traffic comes from, and that traffic is all about click, 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 click. There's got to be something to break that click mindset when they get to your website to actually get them to put their name and email in. You actually have to break the click, click, click mentality, kind of like getting someone to break sugar. You know, and if you can't do that, then people will just bounce and go right back to Pinterest.
Gotcha.
So then the last one is if we write a blog post with the goal of moving them to the highest paying pages on our site, then we need to design the blog post so that people can see, because you can't click something you can't see. So they need to be able to see the other parts of your site that make money. So we're a huge fan of the custom sidebar, which allows me to, you know, if I'm going to do a recipe post, then it allows me to have a sidebar that includes thumbnails to my best recipes. But for me, they're going to be the recipes that AdSense is paying me the most money on, or that most people are opting into my ebook for.
Mm-hmm.
And then those need to be sort of pre-sold in the post itself, but also visible in the sidebar and potentially underneath the post. And, you know, sometimes if you just rely 100% on automation, like related post plugin, then you kind of lose control of the fact that you're really the CEO of your business, and you should be in charge of what goes in the sidebar and what goes in the post. But, you know, some people kind of get lost in the automation, and they just think that the related post thing is going to bring up the right ones, and then they're going to magically make money.
I have it on one of my blogs, and I'll go back and go, what the heck? That doesn't even, what the heck? I mean,
yeah.
Why is it pulling that?
And
so I'm getting ready.
You can very easily have a swipe file in your text editor on your Mac or whatever, where you have the HTML already written out, ready to copy and paste at the bottom of a post with the, you know, three or four thumbnails, you know, in the HTML table or whatever, that you can just copy paste to the bottom of a post and go. Create your own related posts plugin at the bottom, basically.
Oh, that makes sense.
Putting
I
your,
like that.
Putting yourself back in charge.
Right, right. That's a great tip. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
and you're right about the automation. So keep on going. I'm fascinated. I don't want to interrupt.
Oh, well, so what were we in the beginning? So we were talking about basically purposefulness. So the whole problem with WordPress and automation and, you know, plugins and that is that we end up relying on the simplicity, and mostly because most bloggers are part-time, and just to get a blog post written is, you know, hard enough. But when we totally rely on the crutches, you know, most specifically the SEO plugins that people seem to rave about, is we realize that we're no longer in control of our own site, and what we thought was working is really automating mediocrity. And, you know, that can't really be part of our site as a whole if we're hoping to run this as a business.
Okay,
and, you know, some
so
people just hobby, you know, just blog for a hobby. And they'll do, those people
right,
can just keep
right.
doing what they're doing. That's fine. But when we're trying to derive revenue from our activities, we've got to be the CEO in every corner of the site, you know, every pixel.
Well, I agree with you. Now, go back to the SEO plugins. What do you have to say about those? I use Yoast SEO a lot. What is your differences with those?
So the SEO plugins they're okay. The problem that comes with the SEO plugins is that we do what the plugin says to do, and then we press publish, and then we expect a result, you know, traffic from the search engines. And then we get sad when there is not a result, or we tell people the SEO is hard, or we just don't do it.
Right.
So the problem with the SEO plugins is that they have four or five or six functions. You know, the first function is, I'm going to be a reminder for you. I'm going to remind you to put your keyword in your title. Great. I'm going to remind you to put your keyword in your URL. Great, but not needed. I'm going to remind you to put your keyword in the body of your text. Great. And now I've got three green lights and I can press go. But 99 million other people have the same plugin. So 99 million other people are also putting their keyword in the title and their URL and in the description or in the post itself and pressing publish. So if 99 million people are doing the same thing, then how does Google decide who is the most relevant? Because that's their only job, is who is the most relevant for this topic. Now, we have on Blogging Concentrated, we have a blog post publishing checklist that has 26 items, not like five, because it takes more than three or four things to become the most relevant page on the internet for a particular topic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you rely on the SEO plugins, then you're basically relying on a crutch that isn't actually helping you get to the finish line, and then you're resting some of your disappointment on the fact that you relied on the crutch. So the crutch does not do this. This SEO plugin does not say, make sure that your other related posts on your own site are linked back to this new post. You know, your supporting articles, make sure you link them back. It does not ask you to go out and make sure that you have incoming links to your post, you know, from different sites. It doesn't do any of the things that actually make you relevant on the internet. It just is a reminder that, hey, you did put your keyword in your title. Like that's all it does. After that, you're dead in the water, because somebody like Jessica Turner at The Mom Creative, all she did after writing a blog post called 101 Easter Basket Ideas is she created a neat pin for her for her post, and she put it on Pinterest, and she got 71,000 people to repin it. And now she's number one for 101 blog, you know, Easter basket ideas. Mm-hmm. But her post isn't SEO friendly. It doesn't have the keyword written throughout. It's 101 links to other websites. Why her post is number one is because 71,000 humans said, yes, I agree, this is a great post, and they pinned it. The SEO plugins don't ask you that at all. They don't say, you know, are you doing the things that humans will like? Is there a custom sidebar on here that will make somebody click a second page on your site? And thus, you know, when you click two pages, you're a lot closer to pressing the like button than when you just read one blog post.
True.
So all of the things that make you relevant aren't in the plugins. And they're fine. I love that people use them, but I certainly don't want anyone to be disappointed if that is 100% of their SEO efforts.
So it's part of a strategy, but by no means the only thing that you should be doing.
Yeah, it's very similar to going to a marathon and bringing with you the bucket of oranges to eat at the end of the race and, you know, maybe an extra pair of shorts and expecting that you're going to finish the marathon. You know, unless you train and do the other things required, you know, the checklist at the end of the, you know, on race day is not going to help you.
Excellent point. Okay, so keep on going. I'm taking notes like a crazy person. You know, I keep shoving my cat off my notepad so I can write down stuff. And she keeps coming right back. I mean, this is fascinating because SEO is very, very important. I mean, it's critical. And I love the fact that you're making the correlation between actually getting out and doing all of these other things, because it's logical, it's linear when you think about it, but if you don't know to think about it, you don't know to draw people in by having a sidebar, to draw them in by going to Pinterest, which is huge, by the way. If you're not on Pinterest, y'all, listen to us, get on Pinterest. But there are just so many other places you need to be, and I think a lot of bloggers and, you know, people who are trying to do product launches don't understand that.
Well, no, and I would argue with a little bit when you say SEO is critical in the fact that SEO is really just a tool.
Well, when I say
tool
critical,
that provides
I mean organically.
Leverage.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
To me, and I could be dead wrong about this, but it sounds like I'm not because I'm, you know, I'm in step with you on this, but SEO to me is organic. You're doing all kinds of things and not just one, you know, one plug-in. I mean, you're out there just doing all of these other things to drive traffic to your blog post or your product or your teleseminar, whatever it is. To me, that's SEO, not just within your blog. Am I explaining that
right? So I would say sort of. I would agree with that, but I would probably describe it differently.
Okay, go ahead, because I can always use some updates to my thinking.
So SEO really is the art of proving relevance. That's all it is.
Okay.
Because we're trying to prove that we're relevant on the web.
Right.
And we're hoping, because that's all we have, is that we're hoping that when we prove that we're relevant, that the search engines will agree. And the search engines will provide us leverage. They will drive us traffic while we're sleeping so that we don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
So SEO is the art of becoming relevant so that we can have somebody else working on our behalf, driving traffic to our site. But all of those other activities that we do, the Pinterest and all those other things, those are activities that help prove relevance, but those are non-SEO activities. So like Jessica putting her pin on Pinterest is a traffic driving strategy for Pinterest. You know, it's a way to piggyback on their traffic and have Pinterest drive traffic to our site. But the ancillary effect of that is when Google sees all that traffic coming to the site and it realizes that we're more relevant than it thought we were. So now we have improved our relevance on the web by doing some of these ancillary activities.
Okay.
But by no means do you have to try to employ the tool of SEO to drive traffic. You know, people like, you know, sites like findingjoy.net, you know, Rachel Martin, she gets, you know, sometimes 100,000, 200,000 people to her site. And none of it is from the search engines. And it's all from, you know, from likes and shares and viral activity and people, you know, other big sites asking to syndicate her work because her work resonates, you know, so deeply with her audience, you know, her audience of mothers, that they just can't help but share it. Mm-hmm. So she is employing the, I guess you would call the tool of voice, in order to drive traffic to her site. And then JackCruz.com, which is, he's a neurosurgeon. He was originally from Tennessee. I think he lives in Alabama now. He doesn't employ the tool of SEO either. He's all about sharing knowledge. And he does so in forums all over the web and drives a ton of traffic from forums to his site all the time, oftentimes without even mentioning his site. He'll just answer a question with 300, 2,000, 5,000 words in a forum, and people are so impressed with the answer that they click his profile, and then they go to his forum profile, and then go to his website. So in that kind of activity, inside a closed forum, isn't the kind of thing that Google tracks from a relevance factor because it's in a closed community.
Right.
But he gets a ton of traffic from forums and places like that because he's sharing knowledge in a place where people need it most. So
now,
he also is not.
I'm sorry. Would you include Facebook groups in that kind of forum category or no?
Yes. Although, so Facebook groups are different than something like March Daily Apple. So, I mean, March Daily Apple is a huge forum. I mean, I don't know how much they get. They probably get 150,000 people a day. So the difference between March Daily Apple, which is a health and nutrition forum, and a Facebook group is that there is something about going to Mark's Daily Apple that has a sense of purpose that there doesn't exist in Facebook. So, you know, on Facebook, we have a group called Free Weekly Mastermind where we talk about these topics all the time. Mm-hmm. And we get, you know, at the most, somebody will write 200 words about their question or about the answer. But they won't write 1,000 words because they're already on Facebook for other reasons, for social, for connecting, for driving traffic to their own business. And then they come over to Free Weekly Mastermind to ask that question that's on the top of their mind. But it isn't as purposeful as actually going to Mark's Daily Apple, where it's all about health, and there is no ancillary, you know, friend chat and all that other stuff going on. It's just this sense of purpose that people have when you're on a forum. So if you find a forum, and I'm a huge fan of putting in quotes something like powered by V Bulletin in quotes, and then the word and with all capital letters, capital A, capital N, capital D, and then the name of your niche, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm. Hand weaving, you know, or whatever it is. Google will return to you all of the forums that are powered by the software V Bulletin that talk about your niche. So, I mean, those are talkers. Those are people who are ready to comment on your blog post. They're internet commenters. They're just waiting to comment on something.
Okay.
And there's all kinds of questions there. So if you can go there, now don't go to a forum and start asking questions in order to create conversation, because then you're just one of the other folks. You go to a forum and then you start answering questions with as much knowledge as you possibly can, as long as it takes, without self-promotion, just 100% serving that person and their question and their answer. If you can do that, you'll be the expert in every forum and people will follow you like crazy.
Nice.
But it does take some discipline. You got to be prepared to, you know, not self-promote. You got to just serve.
Well, and that is something that I preach all the time. Make yourself a resource. Don't get out there on Facebook or LinkedIn or wherever it is that you're hanging out and say, look at me, look at me, look at me. That's a good way to get the door slammed in your face. Be a resource. That's the strongest thing you can do.
The only time that I suggest that people do that against their will is on Pinterest. Mm. I think if you're on Pinterest and you're pinning other people's stuff, you're no longer partaking in a business activity. You're now basically having fun. If you find something else that you think would thoroughly serve your audience, like 100%, and you could not do it better, then I'm fine with pinning it, but otherwise, I don't really want to be using that traffic source to be driving traffic other places. I mean, those people are going to find those pins anyway.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I don't do that either. It just never made logical sense to me.
No.
Okay, so.
You know, and there's a pinner, Budget Savvy Diva, which I usually use as an example. She just pins her own stuff, and she's 300,000 or 400,000 followers, and she gets 10,000 to 12,000 repins on everything. You know, why is she going to drive that much traffic somewhere else? That's not going to feed
exactly.
her family.
No, not a bit. Not a bit. Okay, so, man, you've got so much information to share. I'm scribbling like crazy. Okay, so, I mean, I love what you're saying about forums. I'll be honest with you. That was my eye-opener for today. That was my light bulb moment. There was a time when I was on forums a lot, and then I really got away from that. But you're saying it's an important place to be.
Well, to some degree, if you help people, I mean, if your site helps solve some sort of problem, mm-hmm. then in my mind, you have somewhat of an ethical obligation to be in front of the people who need that help. So SEO is one of those things. If there are people searching for the exact questions that you're solving, then you should probably do whatever it takes to be relevant so that you can be the site answering those questions on Google.
Right.
And the same thing in forums. If there are people who are asking the kinds of questions that you are best prepared to answer, then you should probably put that question in TalkWalker or Google Alerts. You should track whenever somebody asks that question all over the internet, mm-hmm. and then you should make sure that you're there to answer it. Because
I love TalkWalker.
I mean, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, TalkWalker's great.
It is. I like it better than Google Alerts, to be honest. Okay, good point. Okay, well, keep on going. I'm going to try my best to not interrupt. I'm not promising, but I'll try.
So what path should we go down? What subject?
Well, I think really what, you know, we're talking about blogging today. So I think our audience probably, and I'm stuttering a little bit here because I've got so many questions, but I'm guessing that our audience is probably people right now going, I have a blog, you know, it's attached to my business. I might be a virtual assistant, a web developer, whatever I am, but it's really not serving me very well. People don't even leave comments. I mean, nothing really is happening. So you gave some really great information on, you know, kind of how to serve the audience. How else can they serve their audience through their blog? What else should they be doing?
Well, they probably have a problem that we call speed bumps.
Yes.
Speed bumps for us are things that are stopping you from becoming better at your business, and you might not even realize it. So one of those speed bumps for me, and it was a small one, but I did not know how easy it was to create an email with my domain name, so dan@bloggingconcentrated.com. I did not know how simple that was and how it only takes like 3 minutes at the most to create, to set up your own email. And so I got a Gmail account and I put Gmail on my business card. And because I had it in my mind that I was going to take some effort to learn that, I didn't do it for a long time. And during that period of time, I walked around with a business card with a Gmail address, which reduced my overall professionalism, which I was working very hard on my other hand to improve.
Mm-hmm.
So I was letting this little tiny thing that was potentially in the back of my head get in the way of my business's success. And it took, Michael Schultz at the Reignite Group at a conference to help set up an email for me and show me how simple it was before it dawned on me, like, whoa, why did I let that sit so long?
And then, of course, you can port it into Gmail and respond from there.
Oh, yeah. Manage everything there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that most people get stuck on the speed bumps. They think that there's something out there that's hard, and because it's hard, they should probably not broach it. But if they were in a mastermind group and they were brainstorming about what their ideal business would look like and how it would be set up, they always have these grandiose ideas that don't actually exist on their site. And most of the time, they don't exist on their site because of speed bumps. They think there's something hard about it. Mm-hmm. And when we let that hard thing dictate the future of our business, we again lose control of being the CEO. which is why they get paid millions of dollars, you know, and all
they
the big corporations.
They also delegate like crazy.
Yeah. So
sometimes if you don't know how to do it, find somebody.
Like, there are people who would like to sell an ebook, but they have it in their mind that they have to research shopping cart technology, and they got to add stuff to their site, and they got to put some sort of a funnel and a path in. But the reality is, all you have to do is go to PayPal, click on Merchant Services, click on Make button, and then make a button. It just says how much is your ebook, and then what's the name of it, and do you only have 30, or is there an unlimited number? And then it gives you the HTML. And you just paste the button on your site, and the button says buy now. And then you can say, hey, buy my ebook. And all that's it. They just click the button. It goes to PayPal. And when you set up the button, you told the button, after they're done with the purchase, redirect them to this URL. So put the URL in of the ebook, or put the URL in of the book where the ebook can be downloaded. Just, it's very, very simple.
Yeah, there's so many ways to get those out there. Just ask questions. Somebody will help you.
Yeah, I mean, there's sites like Elance and Fiverr where there are people totally ready to just do stuff for you at a moment's notice to make your life easier. Like today, or maybe it was last night, I went to Elance and I said, hey, I need a new email template for AWeber, and these are the things I need the template to do, which I just wrote out in prose because I don't write technically. And I said I needed to have a sidebar, and I need to be able to switch out a logo every once in a while. And if possible, I would like two different templates with two different headers. And this morning, I woke up, and I got five proposals from freelancers around the world, and they were all around $37.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
For $37, I can have a whole new professional email template set up. I could do it myself, but really, $37, it's going to be done probably in the next 2 hours.
Exactly.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's the industry that I'm in, is virtual assistants. I mean, you don't need to be doing things that take you away from your creativity. You let the experts do it. We can do it quick, you know, quick, cheap, easy, not cheap really, but, you know, I mean, we can do it and free you up to do other things. But you're right. I mean, that some things you just don't need to be doing on your own.
So now
especially
your audience is saying, I would like to do that, but I'm not making enough money yet to outsource. Mm-hmm. This is what people are saying listening to the call. So if I'm in the room with them, I'm asking them one question, and this is the question they can't answer, which is why they have this mentality. So the one question is, how do you make money? That's the only thing that you need to know. Do you make money when you post on Facebook, and from Facebook somebody comes to your site and they click an ad? Is that how you make money? Or do you make money because you wrote a blog post, and the search engines picked it up, and the traffic is bringing people back, and you're making a percentage on AdSense? Like, how do you make money? Now, if I know exactly how I make money, like, exactly, then I no longer have the question of, I'm not making money because so I can't outsource. The question is, if I know how I'm making my 3 cents, and it's going to cost me $37 to get this email template, how do I turn my 3 cents into $37 while he's making the email template?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I do more Facebook posts? Like, what is the thing that you do that makes you money? Because if we can do that while we're outsourcing, then we get used to the idea that money comes in on the left and goes out on the right. And right now, most people are in this nebulous realm of, I don't really know how it comes in, so if they were working on it, I wouldn't know what I'm to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the opposite is true. If you know that tweeting is actually driving some traffic, which is increasing your ad sales, or going to IFTT and automating and getting your stuff out to other sites, if you know that's what's making you money, then have the virtual assistant do that while you write the ebook. Have them make you money while you're using your brain and expertise to create the product.
Right.
So the only thing I want bloggers to do is figure out how do you make money, because then we can leverage that and start to build a team by working off that concept.
That makes perfect sense to me. Listen, man, we have only got about 15, 20 more minutes, and you're going to have to come back. I hate to tell you this, but you're officially invited back. Listen, I've heard you say this, and it's important, I think, in terms of our conversation, because we're talking about websites, we're talking about blogging, but the real value of a keyword theme map. Do you have time to explain that?
Yes. So we, as part of an SEO strategy, my goal is to figure out, and let's just use a vegetable garden. Like, we're going to write a site about vegetable gardens. So I need to know, if I want to employ the tool of the search engines, I want to know if my audience exists in the world, and there are people who like vegetable gardens and who grow vegetable gardens and who research them. So my audience does exist. They're out there. They just don't know that I exist. That's the only problem. So if they're out there, then I want to use a tool like Brainstorm Tools, which is my favorite keyword research tool, and I want to research everything that people search for revolving around vegetable gardens. I want every keyword. And then the benefit that you get with Brainstorm Tools is that it tells me not only how many people search for it, but how many people are competing for it. So I really don't like to go after big keywords that, you know, have like 99 million searches a month, and then there's 87,000 competitors, because I'm not going to beat 86,991 people to become number one. That's just not going to happen. But there are tons and tons of keywords where there are 1,400 searches per month and there's only one competitor, or even 24 searches a month and one competitor. Like, if those 24 people are my people, then I want those people. Mm-hmm. And I'll take 24 people a month forever if I just write a blog post. So I want to start to compile all the keywords that people search for that are interested in vegetable garden. And then I'm going to sort the keywords into what I call silos. And I use the Google's display planner to help me figure out what the silos should be called. And then I want to put all of the related stuff together. So one column in vegetable garden might be, you know, vegetables that grow in shade. So now I want to figure out all the stuff that has to do with people who have, you know, vegetable gardens that are shady. So I want to put them together. And at the end, I end up with, you know, maybe we have, you know, above ground vegetable garden, and we have shade vegetable garden, and we have some people even they grow vegetable gardens based on a particular recipe. So they might have like a gumbo garden, and they grow all the vegetables for that gumbo.
I'm laughing because that, I mean, I grow filet and all of that, so I know what you're talking
about. So then
about.
I might have a, you know, I might have a silo for that, whatever it is that my site looks like. Mm. So in the end, I have five. Well, for me in Excel, they're columns. So I have like 5 or 6 or 10 columns that reflect my site navigation. And under each one of those columns is all of the keywords that I'm going to write about, because that's my audience searching online. So if somebody is searching for, you know, how to grow tomatoes in shade, I am going to write an article called How to Grow Tomatoes in Shade, and I'm going to categorize it, you know, WordPress categories or whatever blogger, in that silo. And then I'm going to link it to other things in that same silo. So other shade-related things, because I want a nest of relevance. I want like a cocoon of all things related. And then when I use a plugin like NRelate that will allow me to have related posts at the bottom, I will also be able to tell it only pull related posts from the same category. So now not only have I figured out exactly which keywords I'm looking for, but I've categorized them and I've put my automation together so that it works for my audience. Now, the only thing that's going to show up in the related post plugin are other articles related to shade gardens, because that's the only thing they care about. So why would I put anything else in there? So having this list of, I don't know, 150 or 500 keywords means that not only do I know what I'm going to write about, but I can start crossing them off as I do and filling in the holes, and soon I'll have pretty much every base covered that my audience would ever want to know about. And if I look at it daily, it also means that I won't miss an opportunity that I just didn't know I had. So it might be the case that that for some reason that people search for, that are searching for vegetable gardens, have something about, let's just say, stuffed peppers. Maybe they really, there's a whole section, on a whole group of people who grow peppers to make stuffed peppers. And unless I do the research ahead of time to see what people are researching and learning about, I won't know when I go to the next restaurant that if I see stuffed peppers on the menu, I won't know ahead of time that I should probably order that and take a picture of it, put it on Instagram and everywhere else so that I can link people back to my silo. When I have the information ahead of time, I stop missing opportunities that you're missing today because you just don't know the full extent of what your audience wants, loves, and needs. So the keyword theme map is critical for an SEO strategy and for a content strategy if you're really trying to get in front of the people who want what you offer.
Excellent. I hadn't even thought of it like that. I totally get where you're going, but I like that you've really just really drilled down and you've created these silos. I love that idea. Another quick question. Why would Facebook marketing keep you in a hole?
So Facebook is the community in my hope for you is that Facebook is a place where you converse with your community.
Mm-hmm.
So you've built the community from wherever, from going to live events, from friends of friends or whatever that is. Now you have a nice group of people on Facebook, whether they're in a group or whether they're just your Facebook friends, it doesn't really matter. It's just your community. Those are your peeps. So if a lot of your marketing focuses on your Facebook strategy, then you are talking to 100% of your peeps minus the percentage that Facebook won't let you reach.
Right.
Plus 10% or 8% of the people who will see it because their friends were tagged in it. So, Rachel at Finding Joy, she's fantastic. She has 35,000 Facebook fans, but most of the time her stuff reaches 60 and 100,000 people because her stuff resonates so much. Her stuff just gets shared like crazy. But most people don't have that kind of voice. So if they have 100 fans, maybe they'll reach 70 of their fans that day. But then not only do you have those 70, but then you have 70 plus 5 because you're reaching, some of their friends are seeing your stuff. So now you're basically reaching 75 people of your 100 fans. But none of those people are 6, 8, 10 steps removed from you. So if you limit yourself to Facebook and you work there as a marketing strategy, not as a community building strategy, then you end up just kind of churning the same people over and over and over again, where your audience exists all over the globe. I mean, there are people everywhere on the planet who want what you have, but they can't find you if you're on Facebook because they're not friends with your friends or friends of their friends. So you end up just continuing to grow within the community a little bit, but you could grow greatly by being a little bit more outside. Even Facebook advertising helps. And there's obviously a tipping point on Facebook. There's sites like Kroger Crazy. That's a group that's couponing that went from, 100,000 to 150,000 in 6 months, and then 150,000 to 200,000 in 4 months, and then, 200,000 to 250,000 in 2 months. So there's a tipping point. But until then, there's just so many people on the globe who want what you have. Why not spend a lot more time going after them instead of waiting for them to come to you?
That makes sense. Now, Facebook is a fun place to be, and you're right. It's largely about community. But I find the same thing. If you're just kind of focusing on Facebook, particularly given all the changes that Facebook is making recently, you're going to be in dire straits quick, very, very quickly. It's just not a smart thing to use Facebook as your primary marketing tool.
We recently started the Amplify podcast on iTunes for the sole purpose of reaching an audience we couldn't reach before.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't on iTunes before. We weren't, now we're on the front page these last few weeks for our, I guess it's called New and Noteworthy, is where we are on iTunes. People are liking it. So we have this period of time where we can piggyback on iTunes' traffic to bring people to the podcast. And then after this period of time is over, when we're allowed to be in the new and noteworthy section, then we're going to have to do some more stuff to drive podcast traffic. But the podcast is not Facebook, and it's not blog posts. It's a new way to reach bloggers that I couldn't get in front of before, very similar to coming on your show. I could not reach the people that you have already spent all your time and energy reaching.
Right.
So going
and,
after
you know,
them
I'm
is
leveraging
a fantastic
your audience
strategy.
And yeah, I'm leveraging your audience. You're leveraging mine. It's a win-win, and you're giving our audience some great information. You definitely need to come back. I have one last question, though, because I think this is important. I know that you have gone from, you know, when you started your business, you were doing all the different things that you're doing, and now you're doing workshops across the country. How did you get started doing that?
We had some bloggers that would get together. They would pool their money, and then they would hire me to come teach for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that. That was fantastic. And one day I thought to myself, man, how do I get more of these bloggers to get together and pool their money and hire me? And then I was trying to think of how would I do that? Like, do I start suggesting it to different blogging groups? And then in the end, I decided, you know what? Why don't I just make them come to me?
Right.
I'll do workshops on my own, and I'll invite them instead of the other way around. So last year we did 20 different cities, and this year I think we're doing 27. We have 11 left. We're going to be in San Francisco on August 9th. I think that's our next one. And we do one-day workshops and try to reach as – I mean, we try not to – like in San Francisco, I'm going to pull as many people from San Francisco as I can. My goal is not to get people from Pocatello, Idaho to fly over or, you know, from Richmond, Virginia to fly there. I just want to leverage the San Francisco market. Mm-hmm. And then that also means – that simplifies my world because it also means I don't have to worry about helping people with lodging or travel or any of that other stuff. I can just – you know, just come in the morning and go home in the evening.
Right.
Which, you know, simple. Although it's not nearly as simple as that, but certainly did seem that way in the beginning.
Exactly. And the reason I'm asking is because I know it's another part of your marketing, you know, toolbox, so to speak. So I think that kind of goes back to overcoming speed bumps. Don't be afraid of it. It can happen. Just figure out if you want to be up in front of an audience, if you want to, you know, be in front of people selling, sharing, you know, creating these products. There are ways to do it. Just don't, you know, let fear get in the way.
And don't let failure get in the way either. I mean,
we
just canceled the Boston event, which was August 2nd, because I couldn't physically reach enough people. I tried very hard, and we just couldn't. So the revenue didn't justify the expense. We couldn't make it work, and we had to cancel it, and that really sucks. You know, we don't usually do that. That was basically our first. But, you know, it's just the way it is. Well, at least we tried. And we have a little traction, and we're going to go back in the spring and try again. But
there you go. August is tough sometimes.
You know,
people are – they're on vacation. They're tired. They're hot. August is tough.
Yes. And, you know, we have four events in August.
Oh,
and
boy.
All of them except Boston are good.
Hmm. Well,
and I'm not ashamed of it. I mean,
it's
just, you know.
No,
it didn't
work. It's a good thing
that
you cut your losses on it and you can go back and then do it again. Honestly, timing is everything. If your timing is off, it's just not going to work. But if your timing is good, it's brilliant. So, I mean, you now have that warm audience, so to speak. And when you are ready to go there, they'll be ready to accept you.
Yeah, and we'll try again. And we'll vigorously go after Boston. It's one of my favorite U.S. cities. And, you know, if we don't make it, we will make it, but we're going to try.
Go. There you go. You will. I have all faith in you. Well, listen, we are just about out of time. We've got about 60 seconds. Would you tell people where they can find you on the Internet?
Sure. We'd love for anyone listening to come to bloggingconcentrated.com. We are pretty much our entire world is housed there. And we also run the Amplify podcast on iTunes. Blogging Concentrated is where we have, you know, information for our workshops. We have a continuing education module we call BC Prime, where we do webinars and talks and books and ebooks and all kinds of blogging knowledge. I couldn't say bloggingconcentrated.com more than three times. Bloggingconcentrated.com. those four.
I love the name, though, by the way, bloggingconcentrated.com. There's no error for misunderstanding. I mean, there's no room for misunderstanding. You get what it is.
No. And I couldn't think of a longer word than concentrated. So, you know, that's what it is.
I like it. Well, Dan, thank you so much for being with me here today. And you are definitely invited back. We have a lot more to talk about.
Well, I appreciate you having me. And to start with, well, I'm more than happy to come back.
Oh, good. Well, listen, you gave our audience some great, great tips today. I know I was scribbling down things, and, you know, I'm going to have to actually have this show transcribed because there was so much information in it that I want to go back and pull out that, you know, as soon as we're done, this one's going to my transcriber. Well,
nice,
thank you
nice.
Again. Yeah.
And take a look at our schedule. Pick a city, and you could come as a guest.
I would love to. I would love to. Well, listen, we'll chat after the show. Well, listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in just about an hour. And you can find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Dan R. Morris. And I will see you next week. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.